Dad, we were recently on a trip to India together. It was my third time with you over the years, and each time I've loved it even more. We get to see a different side of you. When we were in Mumbai, we saw you playing soccer with the kids in the street. You make friends with the store owners, people who ordinarily probably wouldn't receive the time of day from a lot of people there. Naomi commented as we were watching you that you really seem to come alive when you're there. And I was just wondering, you know, what kind of thoughts and feelings and emotions go through your head when you return?
Yeah, I think I would have to say going back home, if you put yourself in my situation, if sort of 20 years from now you're transplanted and you're living in another country, and then you come back here to Atlanta and to Alpharetta, what kinds of emotions would go through your mind, the favorite restaurants, the favorite people you knew, the friends you made. For me, it's actually very nostalgic, even though it's been four decades since I left India. To go back to the restaurants, as you see me talking to the owners and telling them stories of what I knew when I was a teenager, and strangely enough, these businesses go from father to son or father to daughter and so on. And so it is. The moment I connect with them and they know the family connection, as we did in the tea shop, the gentleman is the son of the man I knew then. And so the gentleman who owns it is my age, and our memories go back. But I think there's a little more to it. When I was growing up there, I was not the happiest. Things were not going well. And so when I see little kids kicking around a soccer ball or with a makeshift cricket bat and ball, I go and chat with them in Hindi. That connects for them. Delhi was home, so Mumbai was, in a sense, outside my zone area, but brings back a lot of memories. And each time I go back, I know that the possibility of me coming back will get slimmer with the passing years. But there's something about being there and seeing India. In Hindi, there's a word called dharti ke aadmi, which is they are people of the soil. Dharti meaning soil, aadmi, the word for humanity. So we are people of the soil there. And I just loved being there, seeing the children, seeing the shops, seeing the stores, and seeing it through different eyes, but eyes that will always connect to my upbringing. Yep, you're right. There's a different side of me that comes to life that is hard to bring to life on foreign soil.
Well, we had a few days there before the meeting started, but then when they did, your first one was with some exclusive members of Bollywood. Now, this was a follow-up to another meeting that had taken place. Is that correct?
That's right. And, of course, growing up in India, the film industry is big, as you know. I mean, it's supposed to be, I think, the largest movie-producing nation in the world. And actually, one or two names I was familiar with from my youth. And then there's the up-and-coming stars. And then, of course, there's television, which wasn't there when I was growing up. Yes, it was a very unique setting and very privileged setting for me to be able to talk to some of the producers, some big names whose children are now in the movies. But when you think about the audience, there's primarily Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, Jains, that kind of background. I think, as far as I remember, there was only one or two maybe from a nominal Christian background. But it was a thrill to be able to speak to them on issues of pleasure and entertainment and all of that. Yeah, it was a close setting. It was very unique, and the response was absolutely fantastic. In fact, some of them are still in touch with me by email or by text messaging, continuing the discussion on issues that I dealt with while I was there.
You mentioned before that sometimes they're under quite a lot of pressure to keep any questions they may have quiet. Hearing what you just said about the fact that there's still four or five religions that are predominantly represented in that group, why is it that thoughts regarding Christianity still have to be kept under wraps sometimes?
You know, it's the same actually out here when you think about it. Groups of academics, entertainers, and political leadership. They like the privacy of their lives, and I fully respect it. I understand how they feel, how they think, because sometimes people leverage that setting to their own advantage and like to bring out the big names or talk about their personal struggles as if you're now privy to it, therefore you are somebody special in the process. That's the reason. And religion is a very volatile subject, personal subject to them. But I was fascinated by the questions they asked, questions like, who is God? Questions like, how does one find hope within themselves, which is fascinating to me because we think success stories don't normally bring about such questions, but they, I think, do even more. It would be like walking to the dressing room of a big baseball team here, a football team here, and having the big name performers asking you questions on life and meaning. We assume that because they are on the screen, they have put all of life together, and they haven't. Life's questions are haunting, whether you're on the street trying to make a living or whether you're in the media with a big recognizable name. In fact, I think sometimes the bigger the success, the greater the emptiness. And because they've reached certain levels and the answers are not there in their success, they have to dig deep still to find answers for the soul.
When you're with the Bollywood actors, you were speaking to those who were already established in the industry, but you had the opportunity to speak to students who are really up and coming. They're going to be the next generation of those that influence the film industry out there. You spoke at the Whistling Wood Film Institute, which is one of the most prominent academies out there. It's affiliated with a lot of well-known people, both in Bollywood and Hollywood. I was pretty impressed with a lot of the names they had there. You mentioned that it was the dean of the student body who invited you, kind of took a personal risk, not knowing mm-hmm. what exactly you would say. But then he himself asked a pretty powerful question during the Q&A time. He wrote it down and handed it in. So what was your interaction like with both him and the students?
Yeah, that was fascinating. I remember, of course, you being there and two or three of the others with me. There are actually two people. The dean wasn't present at that. He was traveling overseas. But you're right. He's the one who invited me and took a big risk. But then the dean, interestingly, was an overseas person, an international person. But the president of the Film Institute is an Indian gentleman whom you met and we got to meet, who did ask the very interesting question. And actually, the president is the key figure out there, being first Indian and secondly a more recognizable name in the film industry. Yes, it was a risk for both of them, because of the nature of the subject. It is impossible to talk about finding meaning in life beyond the box office without going to spiritual questions and spiritual issues. And as you well remember, some of the young actors and actresses budding, and some of them actually still recognizable names, just they surround you after a meeting such as that. To address the issue of life beyond the box office is the subject they assigned. I didn't select that. And to find their interest level so transparent. And his question, if I remember right, was something about competition. Is competition a legitimate thing, or does it end up exacting a heavier price from the one who is not at the top over against the one who is the big name? I thought it was a fascinating question, and on my feet to try to answer that was that was the first time I had had a question such as that. Great to be there, great to see the risk they took. And afterwards, the president of the institution said to me, can we have you back here for a week? And dealing with questions such as this, I was just very honored. And hopefully you recognize more of the names than I did, because it's more your world than mine now. But I appreciated the interaction we had afterwards and the names that you could see involved, big names from the Hollywood scene and production scene, who are involved in that. It's Asia's largest film institute, so that was fascinating to be invited there.
And I know there was one gentleman there, we probably won't mention his name, but he is also very prominent in the industry, and at first said he would only be there for a few minutes, but ended up staying the whole time and actually gave quite a good introduction, I thought, of you mentioning to the students that what they believed would ultimately come through in their work. And, of course, he stayed the whole time and then came up and talked to you afterwards, and I've heard you say it a couple times, but he had quite a question for you that led to the discussion about coming back and doing more.
Yeah, it's true. And again, one of the reasons I think, in all fairness to him, that maybe he was not quite sure. Interestingly enough, he had family members in the film industry at the Bollywood gathering who then told him he needed to be there. The Film Institute gathering, very prominent, one of the top names in Indian billing in the movie industry and actually now internationally as well. His comments were fascinating afterwards, and he stayed and took up about 20 to 25 minutes in personal discussion. You're right. And here was his comment, actually. His comment to me was, I was both inspired and disappointed by your talk. He's that kind of guy, very blunt. And he said, inspired in that it was wonderful to hear the thoughts you were sharing, but disappointed in that I was hoping you'd get more to the issues of a personal search for meaning. Yeah, if I remember right, he said something like this. He said, what I struggle with inside personally was really not addressed in a talk such as this. So I looked at him and I said, and of course the president of the Institute was standing next to him again because of his prominence. I said, yes, you're right. I didn't get to that issue. I said, because the nature of the subject was such that I didn't want to exploit the opportunity and get into the evil struggles within your heart and mine. It would have been rather presumptuous for me to do that. I said, now, if this gentleman, who is the president here, would ever to have me back to address an issue like that, I'd be very happy to do it. But I felt I might be crossing the line of the privilege that was given to me. And the president immediately, at that point, came into the conversation and he said, thank you for being that respectful and not just taking any moment you saw as an opportunity to express your own faith. He said, because of the way you have honored that trust, I would like to have you back. And I would like to have you for a whole week, and there'll be no constraints on you. If the students want to ask that nature of question, you'll be free to answer it. You know, son, the thing is, you have to earn the right to be heard. And I think that's the key in cross-cultural communication. People are very nervous about the lines you might cross. And it's true here in the academic arena. People take a risk when they bring you in and put their name behind it. So I think this would now be my second visit when I go back to the Film Institute, but my third visit with the stars. So by being cautious and not being carefree in sort of dealing with the subject, I think it has built a good rapport for me. I'm thrilled, actually, if my father were alive and my parents were alive, they would have seen this as a dream opportunity and how God has orchestrated it. So I'm really looking forward to getting back there.
Shifting gears kind of from, you know, the glitz and glamour of India, another reason we were there was for a ministry which deals with the darker side there, and that was Bombay Teen Challenge, which was celebrating their 20th anniversary. And Devaraj has worked over the years, you know, ministering to and rescuing women who were trapped in the sex industry, rescuing a lot of their children, and rescuing those who are runaways or just living on the streets. And it was the first time I had seen it. I know you and Naomi and Mom had seen it before, but even with all the comments I'd heard before, it was still a painful thing to see. We did have the opportunity of seeing one girl rescued as we were there. I think she was 21 or 22 and had been there for almost 11 years. And while we were there, they took her to her new home, which was quite fascinating to see. But I remember, and I'd heard you say this before, but you talked about the first time you heard about that part of Mumbai and how it was so difficult to believe. And I was wondering if you could share that.
Yeah, it was actually from the, in one sense, from an imaginary world in the movies to the real world of the streets of Mumbai. there were two contrasting settings, and some pretty big dignitaries were there from the commercial world and from political world and so on, for the 20th anniversary of Bombay Teen Challenge. And Naomi, of course, being so involved in raising funds for that incredible work. It was, yeah, you're right, it was a story in the making, as we saw this young woman who had not yet come through all the way, but was literally in the act of being rescued to tell her story on the screen then, and actually be in the audience listening to herself, unable to separate between what she was going through inside and what she was sharing to the audience. I remember the first time I saw that. That's why I encouraged Naomi to get involved in this. I had heard somebody talk about women sitting in cages being marketed in this part of Mumbai. And I remember telling Mom at that time, I can't believe that. I think it's exaggerated what I've just heard. I was in Amsterdam speaking for Billy Graham. The year was 1983 or 86, one of those two conferences, I forget which one of the two, when he said he'd just been to Mumbai. This guy is also of Indian stock, but now living overseas. And he saw women behind cages being marketed. And when he finished, he said, Ravi, have you ever been there? I said, no, I've never been there. And this was on the streets of Amsterdam. I'd finished speaking, and he was telling me about this. So after he left, I told Mom, I find it hard to believe that something like this could go on under the watch of powers that be, civic authorities and so on, and nobody would intervene. It was a few years later. Mom and I were visiting Mumbai, and I told the taxi driver, and actually it was even Michael Ramsden, our colleague from England, was with us in the taxi. And I said, Michael, would you be willing to go there if he says, yes, there is such a place? And so I asked the taxi driver in Hindi, I said, somebody once told me this story, and he said, Hanji, Hanji, which means, yes, sir, there is such a place. I said, I don't want to get out of the taxi, but would you just drive me through there with my wife and my colleague? So it was a mid-afternoon. And I was stunned, absolutely stunned. Now, to be truly reflective, they weren't cages as much as they were back verandas of small, dingy, dark apartments, and there were bars, iron bars, and the women would be standing holding on to it. They looked like cages if you just zoomed in on it, but it was part of a back setting to these apartments where these women were kept, and they'd be standing there, and the people walking on the street, workers and laborers, would want one of them. It was literally dirt cheap from what I'd heard, and very tragic. And hence, every three or four stops, you'd see a sign for AIDS and a dispensary, a clinic, and so on. This was absolute exploitation of young lives and older lives, people who just were out of poverty were making a living. So that's going back 20 years. And then Naomi picked up the work with the support with Team Challenge when her opportunity came. And now 20 years later, to be seeing what God had done, Teen Challenge is something that was going on outside of our work. We just connected with them, and Devraj does an extraordinary work there in the rescue and the rehab, and he has three or four facets to it, including children born as a result of this kind of lifestyle, and sometimes children with AIDS, and the work he's done there is remarkable. So for me to be able to speak at this in their 20th anniversary was almost like a fitting punctuation mark in my own life to hear about it, get involved in it. RZIM's Wellspring International getting in the funding as one of the agencies that helps Devraj accomplish this vision. And then to see a young woman's story being enacted before our eyes. Yeah, it was life-changing for you to be there and life-changing for me to be there. But that was India. Anyone who's seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire will see the glory and the shame of any culture. India is just a typical example, goes on here as well in the U.S. But from Bollywood to the streets of Mumbai, it was two remarkably different settings, and to speak at it was another privilege for me.